Hello, and welcome to The Course. I'm your host today, Lindsay Ford, and I'm speaking with Professor Chibueze Amanchuku, who is the Neubauer Family Assistant Professor of Molecular Engineering at the University of Chicago. Professor Amanchuku's group works on energy-related challenges with a specific focus on understanding how electrolytes can control electrochemical processes in batteries and catalysts. His work has been recognized with the NSF Career Award, the DOE Early Career Award, the CIFAR Israeli Global Scholar Award, amongst others. He is here to talk to us about his career path and how he became a University of Chicago professor. Welcome to the course, Professor Amanchuku.
My name is Chibueze Amanchuku. I'm a Neubauer Family Assistant Professor of Molecular Engineering at the University of Chicago.
Wonderful. Can you tell me how long you've been at the University of Chicago?
Yes, I have been at the University of Chicago since January of 2020.
Oh, wow. What an interesting time to start anywhere.
Very much so. It was not planned what happened in March, but had to go along for the ride.
Did that global pandemic affect your relationship with the University of Chicago in any way, positive or negative?
I would say there were many positives. So I'm an experimentalist, primarily an experimentalist, which means I have lab space that needs to be renovated to suit the type of experiments that I do. And I was fortunate that my lab space was literally ready end of February of 2020. So that made it a very positive experience for me because even though the pandemic shut down everyone, I was not allowed to have the lab or access the lab rather. But the lab was ready such that whenever the university lifted most of the restrictions, we were able to come back to a space that was ready for our work. So that was a positive experience to have that ready for us when even just before the pandemic started. And I was able to also make most of my purchases, all the equipment I needed to buy. I made that even late 2019. So I wasn't significantly affected by the supply chain challenges that arose from the pandemic.
Amazing. Okay, I want to go back. And can you tell me sort of a brief overview of your professional career since college, maybe starting with where you graduated from university or your last stint at university and what you majored in to now?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Nigeria and moved to the US in 10th grade. And so it's a difficult time to have moved, but was just good enough for me to figure out how the American college system worked. I majored in chemical engineering at Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas. And by my junior year, I had to decide, okay, what did I want to do? Most of the curriculum and most of my internship experiences have primarily been at companies. I was fortunate to have an internship at an oil refinery after junior year, worked at a different oil company after sophomore year, and trying to decide, is that what I wanted to do? And felt that I did not see myself doing that as a full-time employee. And so once that decision was made, I took the GRE. I got admitted to MIT Chemical Engineering. That's where I pursued my PhD. And from there, I went to Stanford University to do a postdoctoral fellowship. I was there till from 2017 to 2019. And then started my faculty position January of 2020.
And when you were, okay, so many interesting things than just that one little bit. When you first came to the States, the 10th grade is kind of an interesting time to, uproot your whole life. And I'm wondering, in the 10th grade, you're 14, you're 15 years old, what did you think that you wanted to do with your life? And how did moving to the States or getting further along in high school change that as a young person?
For as long as I can remember, I knew I wanted to be an engineer. I've always admired engineers and said, okay, that's what I wanted to be. So when I moved to the US in 10th grade, it was even in the second semester of 10th grade, so right smack in the middle of the school year. At that time, it was stressful to figure out, okay, what are they going to push me down a class? Because that typically happens to many immigrants that move in the middle of the school year. So that was my first concern. Luckily, they did not. Then the next concern was, oh my God, okay, the US cares so much about extracurricular activities. That's not something that we worry about in Nigeria. It's all about your exam scores. What did you score on the test? So then I had to figure out, okay, to get admission at a university and to get scholarships, I need to do extracurricular activities. Where do I do these things? So all of that, I think, broadened my perspective. But at the core, I knew I still wanted to be an engineer. And the opportunity to come to the US at that time was really life-changing, allowed me to even dream bigger about what I wanted to be and what I wanted to do.
That's so interesting that you were like, what do I do for extracurriculars? So what extracurriculars does a young aspirational engineer who's only focused on tests up to this point, what did you do?
There was an outlet store that was close to the apartment that we lived in that allowed me to volunteer to help arrange clothes, and it was just a volunteer activity that I was able to do. For my at school, there were so many. I was playing catch up in the courses, so I had literally no time. I was trying to make up. Some of my classes did not transfer. Some of my grades did not transfer from Nigeria, so I was playing catch up in the courses I needed to take. And by the time I graduated from high school, I had just the minimum you needed to graduate on time. And so it didn't give me the flexibility to really pursue other interests in high school. But nonetheless, it was an amazing experience to have come at that time and try to figure out I had 2 years to really figure out the American college system.
And what was it that brought you over to the States?
My dad. So my dad was already living in the US and eventually was able to bring the entire family. So to bring my mom and my three siblings and I to the States at that time.
What number are you in the birth order?
I'm the first.
So what was it like sort of showing your younger siblings what to do once they finally got to high school, or how did you sort of take on the role of the oldest, or did you even do that?
Well, no, certainly, because I had to learn most of this by myself. And so I vividly remember my 11th grade, every after school, one really amazing thing that my dad was able to do was to buy a computer for us. I put one computer in his bedroom at home. And prior to that, we would have to go to the library every time we needed access to any computing resource or access to the internet. And so in the middle of my 11th grade, he bought a computer. And that really changed everything because I was able to come back from school and just read what schools offer engineering, what scholarships exist. And so by the time my siblings were ready for that journey, it was much easier because they had somebody in the house that could guide them through what they should do, where they should go. And it happened that the two sisters who followed me both went to the same university I went to, Texas A&M. So we got to overlap. I overlapped with my first sister for 1 year in university, and she overlapped with the other sister for 1 year in university. So it was a really nice transition. And that was made possible by just getting familiar with the U.S. system.
That's amazing. And it's interesting that you all liked overlapping. Sometimes siblings don't enjoy, being at school at the same time. Tell me a little bit about what you did like about being able to sort of watch your sisters grow into, adults while you were also transitioning from each path to the next.
I love the closeness or the close-knitness of the family and the seeking out for advice, knowing that one person has gone through this process and being willing to listen and be willing to say, oh, okay, Chibueze did this. Where can I find these scholarships? Where can I apply? And so that dedication and the realization that we've been given an amazing opportunity to come to the U.S. at that time of our lives and to make the most of all those opportunities. So it was really amazing to see how well they've all done. So I have three siblings. So one is now a medical doctor, one is now a lawyer, and the last one is currently at the University of Chicago, actually, as a junior, as a third-year student. So it's been amazing to see their career path so far and what they've been able to do amazing things.
Oh my gosh, so you're overlapping with the other one. In a way. That's amazing. Okay, when you were little, was there anything that sort of showed that you were, you know, into tinkering with things, into being a little engineer, into figuring out what powered things?
Yeah, I had those interests as well as others. And I remember, you know, though, if I had a toy car, try to figure out how it worked, removing the capacitors or removing the batteries and trying to make my own version. I also had interest in writing. I would write fiction sometimes. So I think I had varied interests, and I still do. But there were glimpses of engineering interest and glimpses of literature and other sports, for example. So it was varied as when I was a child.
That's so fun. How did you realize that engineering was the thing for you? Because you said you had known for a long time, even before high school.
I think one thing was what one would say practical, in the sense that what profession would allow me to be able to make a good living, that was often first and foremost. So growing up in Nigeria, engineers, you know, you could be a doctor, you could be an engineer, you could be a lawyer. Those were the triumvirate of careers that are proposed by parents and really supported by parents. I knew I did not want to be a medical doctor. So the moment I knew that, I said, okay, well, it's an engineer. And we had many engineers work at the really top companies and make a very good living. And it's a really an amazing way to, it's an amazing career. And so I grew up at wanting to have that for myself and knowing that I was also good at the subjects that was relevant for engineering. So I really loved chemistry. I really loved math. So when I came to the U.S., then chemical engineering became that sweet spot that combined all those interests with the promise of a well-paid career, well-paid job. So that combination made it more exciting for me to continue to pursue my engineering interest.
Were there any adults that sort of influenced you, like teachers or, you know, your parents that you were trying to emulate with this career choice, or any that especially supported you once you knew that that's the direction you wanted to go?
Yeah, I've had help. And, you know, it takes the old adage that it takes a village to raise a child. So I've been fortunate to have many different influences. So one from my parents to make the sacrifice that they made to really uproot their lives. You know, from a child's perspective, it's okay. But from an adult, you have long-rooted ties to a place and to uproot that to move to the U.S., primarily for the benefit of your children. So that has always been a driving influence in my life to ensure that, in a sense, that they are rewarded for the sacrifice that they made. I've had uncles who have been very, very supportive in some of them providing, you know, school fees when I was still in Nigeria to go to school. And one especially who, while I was a sophomore in college, paid for me to come back to the U.S., to Nigeria to visit. And from his perspective it's important that I remember my roots. And I think because of that, even my research and the type of work I do is heavily inspired by ensuring that people in Nigeria or people in developing countries come along for the ride in terms of this changing world that we are moving towards. So they've had different influences, but uncles, parents, in really shaping where I am today.
Amazing. So how did you decide to go into academia once, you know, you had started school? What were the factors that sort of pushed you in that direction?
I tell people I typically make decisions through process of elimination. And so during college, I was fortunate to have multiple internships. And the decision points really came at the end of junior year, the summer after junior year. I was interning at an oil refinery. And that's a typical chemical engineering role. But I did not see myself doing that in the foreseeable future, really worried. It didn't give me the excitement I needed to have to wake up every morning and go to the refinery. So that wasn't for me. And the moment that crystallized that, okay, this is not for me, grad school became the other option. I always knew I would love to teach at the end of my career, but I never really planned to be a professor for my career. And so I was, after that summer of junior year, I was able to apply to different universities and got in. And then in grad school, there were other moments where, well, you know, I could do this PhD and then go into industry. But the flexibility and the richness of a professor career really made that decision easier for me, because I felt that if I could become a professor, I could do all these things. I could be a teacher, I could be a mentor, I could be a researcher. I could even have my own startup if I really wanted to dive and do some work in the industrial setting. So I think that flexibility to really do it all under one profession really pushed me towards academia.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about the challenge that you faced when you first came in the 10th grade. You know, what grade were they even going to put you in? What level of courses were you going to be able to take? How many things would you have to retake? Mm-hmm. So obviously that was like a big challenge that you kind of faced earlier than most people face challenges in their, you know, academic lives or careers. Have there been other challenges that you have faced in your journey towards, you know, where you are today?
Well, certainly. I think there have been, you know, different scales. I think the first one you've mentioned in the 10th grade felt, you know, very, very important to me at that time. And in grad school, there were different challenges on trying to figure out, there's always this uncertainty. What, even though you are interested in academia, it's still no guarantee that that you get the position. So there was a challenge there. But I think the really biggest has been the start of this career. So starting as a professor in the middle of the pandemic, really all these well-built plans and well-thought-out plans had to go out the window. I had students who had just joined my lab and there was no research to be done. We were just online trying to figure that out together. I had not even really started this job and now a pandemic had stopped it. So would I be able to be successful in this role? Would I be able to make up for the lost time? So that the whole year 2020 was definitely very stressful and challenging, as everyone around the world can testify. But starting a position like this that is quite intense, and having that extra barrier of the pandemic made it even more challenging than I would have liked. But really just perseverance and knowing that this is what I signed up for. And, you know, the pandemic did not only affect me. Trying to walk around that and do my very best.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about your research focus and how you chose to go into that area?
Before I before I started my PhD, I was fortunate to have an internship at a company called DuPont. And I had to decide, okay, what research project would I do? And they gave me four options. You know, one was on batteries, another one was on some catalysis project. And I remember just Googling, oh, this battery thing sounds interesting. So Googled it. And really, when I did the internship, I really fell in love with the field of energy storage broadly and electrochemistry. I enjoyed the day-to-day work of working on batteries or working on electrochemistry, and also enjoyed the impact that it could have, knowing that if I was successful at what I was doing, there's an entire universe of people really just excited for that technology to hit the market. And so the combination of, you know, loving the day-to-day work, but also knowing what impact it can have on the world, really sold me on this field. And when I entered graduate school, then I was able to, luckily for me, there was a project on batteries that my advisor was interested in supporting. And so that continued the interest, and I've been in that field ever since.
Nice. And doing this kind of research, like you said, it could affect literally everyone and impact their day-to-day lives. What have been some of the most gratifying moments in your work and throughout your career?
There have been many. I guess I can give different examples. And so my postdoctoral work, I was fortunate to have a fellowship through the Tomcat Center at Stanford, and to work on an idea that I had been mulling over for a long time on developing new electrolytes for lithium metal batteries. So electrolytes are, you know, things like seawater, so salt dissolved in some solvent. And I wrote a proposal on this, and I got the fellowship to do the work. And I actually made those compounds, and they are called fluorinated ether compounds, and they are among the state-of-the-art electrolytes for batteries today, for lithium metal batteries today. So to see a project from an idea generation writing a fellowship with the support of my postdoctoral mentor to get the fellowship, to actually do that specific project and to have it be successful, and that has been a really amazing experience in my career so far.
Yeah, that sounds great. I would love to know if someone who is listening to this is a young engineer thinking about pursuing engineering in college or after college, what advice do you have for them? And what is something that you wish you had known that is kind of hard to know until you're in the middle?
So engineering can, in many institutions, and especially even chemical engineering, it's quite difficult as a course of study. I can give an example for chemical engineering. You need to know what a chemist knows. You need to know what a mechanical engineer knows. You need to know what an electrical engineer knows. So it really combines many different disciplines. And many engineering courses are that way. As if I were to give advice, it's really to stick through it. It goes through ups and downs, and it goes through different difficulties. But there is no one prototype of an engineer. Even if you did not tinker with toys growing up, doesn't mean you cannot be an engineer. Even if you didn't get an opportunity to intern or to work at a company in high school or have all these different experiences that some students might have, it doesn't mean that you cannot be an engineer. There is no, okay, you're not good at math. Why not? But we can train you to be good at math. So there is no inbuilt gene that says one is destined to be an engineer. So if one has an inkling of an interest, that one is really able to really accomplish that and do amazing things. And so that's what I would say. I think there is no inbuilt, at least as far as we know, no inbuilt gene that says this is the engineering gene in you. So you really can do it.
Now, outside of where you are right now, are there any, you know, milestones that you'd like to hit? Any places maybe that you would like to work or any research that's going on that you find interesting that you would like to participate in at some point in your career?
So not now, but in some distant future?
Yeah, distant, near, you know, maybe some kind of a dream work situation.
A dream. I think for me, really looking for impact. So in a dream world would be in government, in, for example, in Nigeria, and say, how can we improve the research infrastructure or the education system to allow students to really be at the forefront of engineering in the world? So that's a big dream of mine. I've always had this need and this drive to be able to work in Nigeria and to help really grow the research infrastructure. So that's one big dream. Another dream really is on the research front. We're doing a lot of exciting work on electrolyte discovery for batteries and catalysis. And so we've been fortunate to have several breakthroughs, and I'm really excited to have those to continue to work in that space. So one breakthrough is really using a lot of this machine learning and data science efforts to accelerate the discovery of electrolytes for both batteries and catalysis. So that's something that we really started when I began my faculty position as something completely new. And I really took risks with that, and it's bearing fruit now. I'm really excited to continue that work and to also showcase that work to the broader scientific community.
All right. So I guess right now I would also love for you to walk me through a day in the life of a professor of your status, you know, because you're an assistant professor. How is that different from, you know, a tenured professor's day, or is it? And yeah, just walk me through your day.
Yeah, it is very different from a tenured professor's day. So I think a typical day would involve, okay, so this fall quarter I am teaching. So I'll go teach my course. I might have office hours on that same day. I will have meetings with my students on several projects that they have. I might be editing a paper that they've written that we want to submit. I will have meetings with potential funders, so program managers, to figure out if my project idea is suitable for their research program. Then I will start writing said grant to get funding. And if I'm lucky, I get the grant. If I'm not, I get rejected. And so I go back to the drawing board and say, okay, what was not so exciting, or what was not so clear about this idea? So that's the typical day. So mentoring, teaching, writing grants, looking for money. Yeah, that's my day, a typical day.
Yeah. And what are your favorite parts about that day that you described?
Ooh. There are many parts. They all provide highlights. I think, you know, an amazing part of a day could be getting that grant funded. That would be very exciting because you're able to convey an idea, put it down on paper, something that had not been done before, and get other people around the world to be excited enough to say, I want to fund this. Well, that's always an amazing part of the day. Doesn't happen often as I would like, but it does happen. Another part of the day would be when my students figure out something. Maybe there's been a challenge with their project that they've been struggling to figure out, and then they figure it out. And it's very exciting to see them go through that process and then overcome. And then the project becomes even more exciting because now there's so many more avenues that student can take. So that brings a lot of joy. Another is even within teaching, you get to, you know, each time you teach, you get exposed to a new crop of students, only for that vignette of time. And some of them come to the office and ask questions related to the class, but also ask other questions related to career. How do I prepare for graduate school? I have this fellowship I need to apply. Do you have any advice for me? So I get in each part of my role, I get, you know, exciting moments that happen that make me, that keep the job refreshing at times.
And what are your least favorite parts of your day?
Yeah, I think all with all of these roles also comes with challenges. So one, again, it's, you know, spending a lot of time trying to find the grants that I am eligible for, applying for said grants and not getting them funded. That's a typical one that doesn't make for a fun day. And then if we have things that break down in the lab, so we have an equipment that is no longer working, and we're trying to figure out what's wrong, why is it not working? Did somebody do something, or did the vendor do something? So that's always a not so fun part of the day.
Well, I would love for you to just maybe tell a story of a success you've had as a person, as a student, as a professor, to inspire someone who's listening to this to know what makes all of the bumps in the road worth the journey.
Ooh, that's a deep one. That's a deep one. I think if you asked me, you know, growing up in Nigeria as a, you know, 10-year-old and really seeing where would I be, I would not, in no part of that dream would I be where I am right now. And it came through sacrifice from people who love me, people whom I love, to be able to get here. And there is no predetermined path. I think growing up in Nigeria, I never really dreamed of becoming a professor as my full-time career. I was interested in working at a company, making money, using that to support my various interests. So I would say to anyone, really, this sacrifice with the role from you and from others who help make this dream possible. And it really does, it really is the light that keeps one going. So when you have difficult times in either in the job or around you, there is this knowledge that this feeling, this is where I'm meant to be. The impact that I can make on the world is really enabled through this job, that I can mentor my own students here, but I can also mentor students around the world. I can do research that, if successful, can truly change the world. The work that we do has that potential. I get to teach students who are excited to learn. I get to dream of ideas and convince people to fund them. So all these components of the job definitely keep me going through the ups and downs. But there was nothing in my childhood that one could say predestined me for this role. So I've been really fortunate to be where I am, and I'm quite excited to see where it takes me.
Thank you, Professor Chibuweze Amanchuku, for your time today. And course takers, if you enjoyed listening to today's interview, please check out the other ones. Leave us a comment, subscribe, follow, and share this episode with your friends and family. You can find out more about the University of Chicago through uchicago.edu or the university's campus in Hong Kong through uchicago.hk. Stay tuned for more, and thanks for listening.